Before the internet, when newspapers were printed only on paper, Bob Sardi worked for the Vancouver Sun. Progressives looked forward to his articles, for he reported honestly and supportively on the efforts to improve the lives of local people, particularly those who lived and organized in what is now familiarly known as the Downtown East Side. Bob retired from professional journalism, but not from the schools in this neighborhood, and nor from writing. He's just completed his second play. It's called Tipping Point, and it takes place in the early to mid-1970s in the very area from which we are at this moment broadcasting. And Bob Sardi joins me in the studio to discuss his new play. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, Mordecai. Thanks for that introduction. I hope it doesn't raise expectations too high.
I'm sure you'll meet them.
Thank you.
Why the title Tipping Point?
Well, a tipping point, as you mentioned, this takes place in the early mid-70s, the play. It was a time when the Downtown East Side was still known as Skid Road, and that was the image of it, and the people were not really counted in the citizenry of Vancouver. And a man named Bruce Erickson came along, not just Bruce, but other people, but I'm kind of identifying him as the main one. And they formed the Downtown East Side Residents Association, and through a series of struggles, transformed the image of the neighborhood from Skid Row to the Downtown East Side, from Skid Row to a residential community. And it was a major fight, and it took years, and the fight is still going on, because the media really are insisting on only looking at the negative aspects of a very wonderful, vibrant, dynamic community.
So your theme of the play, I gather, then, is how that transformation occurred from Skid Road to that process by which it occurred.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't actually answer your question. A tipping point, for me, a tipping point is a time, in a person's life when something happens that changes the course of their life. Might be, getting a new job or having a bad accident, an acid trip, winning the lottery, something, meeting somebody new, or having some experience where nothing is the same afterwards. And neighborhoods can have tipping points too, or at least this one does, the Downtown East Side, and it did in the early 70s with the emergence of Dira and Bruce Erickson, Libby Davies, Gene Swanson.
So what were those struggles through which this transformation of people brought transformation of the character of the whole neighborhood?
Well, obviously there was a whole range of struggles. People that lived in the neighborhood at that time, I'm just going to generalize now, but you could say were mainly older single guys living in hotel rooms. And Erickson tackled a number of issues, and in the play it goes into this. It tries to isolate a few to show just the kind of what they were up against. And one was the first one, which, because I was involved in as a journalist, was the over-serving in the beer parlors. And this goes back to the Skid Road image. They're just derelicts here. They're, you know, bums, winos, or whatever. And so we can just keep serving them, and there's no restrictions on us to serve as much as we want. We get them drunk, and then we get them thrown out. And Erickson started on that. That was just about his first issue. No, we have rules here just like in any other community, and rules of the number of glasses on the table, and how much you could drink, underage selling, and so on, because he insisted these are citizens, we're citizens. I know at the time I was thinking, oh, well, why is he doing this? If people want to, you know, go blotto, they should be able to. You know, for me, it was almost like a civil liberties issue. But I went around with him. I saw it, and we got thrown out of beer parlors, literally. And I came to realize it's a community there, and people there are people and citizens. That's the important term, and not just like clients of social services. That was the first one. The second big issue was on fire safety. There were no sprinklers in the hotels. And in the year he got started, there were 13 people just within two blocks of where we're sitting right now died in 1 year in hotel fires. No sprinklers. They were like in, and no staircases enclosed, nothing, you know. And they were actually, he forced them to pass laws on this, and then they still stall. Oh, it's so expensive, and the hotel owners can't afford it. So that was a major campaign they went through, and now there's hardly deaths went way down, and it's not an issue anymore. And I attribute that to Bruce Erickson and to Dira.
And was there a third part?
Yeah, I'm okay, because we're framing this in terms of this play. Actually, there was many, many issues,
right.
Welfare and all kinds of things, but safety in the street. But the third issue, and the one that is really the crowning, that you can call the tipping point for the community, was the establishment of Carnegie Center as a community center. And that was finally agreed to by the city after years of Erickson and Dira really hassling them. In 1976, although it didn't open till 80, it was agreed to in 76. And the whole theme there was we're a community. Every Dunbar's got a community center, Carisdale, Strathcona, Killarney, Britannia, and so on. And we are a community. We need a community center because up to that point, there was no place for people to go to socialize, to play cards, drink coffee, hang out or anything, or go to the library except in beer parlors. So this neighborhood has the most, for historic reasons, it has the most beer alcohol seating capacity in the city. And that was the only place for people to hang out. You can't have a community where you can, the only place to socialize is with alcohol. So they fought for that and they won that, and the city recognized that this is a community and they got the community center. So that is kind of the, I mean, this is a literary, device, but I'm identifying that as the tipping point for the community there.
Right. So Bruce Erickson is one of the central characters. He's a real-life person as well. What was it in his experience, his background, his personality that made him such a dynamic and important part to this transformation, to this tipping point?
Well, that's a good question, and there is a bit of a mystery about it for me, and we're still in the process of trying to figure that out. And he was born in Winnipeg in the 30s, grew up on the streets, went only to grade 3, and then shipped out to, on a merchant ship to China, and then he worked in many different fields, worked in jobs, factories and mills and just all kinds of stuff, just the way people did in the 30s and 40s. And then he became an alcoholic, a really serious alcoholic, and his life was going down the drain. And luckily for him, he got, this is one of his tipping points, if you want to call it that. A cop that he knew in Vancouver, who was a family friend, took him in a back lane and beat the hell out of him. But that wasn't the worst part of it. The cop said, "Well, what would your father think if he saw you, wasting your, destroying your life like this?" And that really affected him. He went into rehab and he came out and beat the alcoholism and got a job on the Knight Street Bridge. And then he hurt his back, and he was going on welfare, and he saw a job being posted at the welfare office to work with advocacy in the downtown east side where he was living. And up to this point, he had been in unions, but not really politicized in that way. And then he met a guy named Peter Davies, who was a social worker and was running this thing. And Davies was sort of a mentor to him, and they realized that every agency up until that point was there to do the work for the residents, and they were not doing it for themselves. And they realized people have to do it themselves. And for the first time, when they held meetings, this is the first time in the history of the neighborhood, people attended meetings as residents and not as clients of a social agency. And it was very empowering, and that was the turn on for him. And this took place in 1972, and it was a turn on for the neighborhood too.
So there are a lot of other people that appear in the play, I assume, that are based on real-life characters. Are there any that are as close to Bruce's story as in the play, people we might know who are in the play?
Well, it's a mixed thing. I'm just doing this playwriting thing is kind of a new thing for me, and I've got so many people, that are giving me suggestions, including dramaturges. I never even heard of a dramaturge before, but that's somebody that tells you, she should die in Act 2, not Act 3. It's more dramatic, and we need more action, meaning more, battles and stuff. So it's a mixture of historical people and people, as they say, characters that are composites of different qualities. And so Erickson is there. Harry Rankin is a character in the one scene with Carnegie. And another main character is a woman who worked in a beer parlor slinging beer and overselling to people to the customers, and Ericsson came in and really hassled her over a period of months, and eventually she really saw what he was saying, and then she went and asked him for a job, and eventually she was hired. That's a character in the play. Now, I've also described what happened to Jean Swanson in her life. And she started out in a beer parlor working there, and Ericsson harassing her about it and stuff. And she came over, and she's been working ever since in the neighborhood. This character is not named Jean, but I've told her this is not you. But anyway, there are some parallels there.
Parts of her life there. I understand there's music in this as well.
Well, this was a major thing for me because I was writing this play, and then there's this guy named Earl Peach. He's a musician. He's he leads the Solidarity Notes. He's a very great guy, and he said, "Well, we need some." I thought he was hired on as a musical director or whatever, and I thought, "Oh, this is like your music between the acts and little punctuation things." He says, "No, we want songs." So, and you're writing them, he said to me, and. This was a major thing. You mean people are going to start like singing in the middle of this, you know, when they're having like confrontations and beer parlors and on the street? He goes, yeah. And I says, well, is the audience going to, you know, go for this? He goes, yeah. So anyway, I wrote these songs. We got four songs in there, and he's written the music to them. And this is really pushing it for me, my growing edge or my tipping point. I'm already thinking next time,
dancing.
Choreography, exactly. And so that was, as I said, my tipping point there. That was great, and it was a real challenge to do that, but I'm happy with the songs. And I think they will add to it because they express the feelings of the people, beer parlor waitress when she goes to work for Dira, what's it like having to put up with, having to see all this deprivation and stress and everything, and how do you deal with that in your life? That's one of the songs, and there's some happy songs too, so there's a mix there.
Well, we're going to call you Bob Berthold Sarti.
Well, it's I'm Oscar Hammerstein II to Earl's Richard Rogers. That's my kind of role model.
This is a very collaborative process. It must be very different from journalism.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I personally have a producer, an assistant producer, a director, a musical director, a dramaturge, a stage manager, and now the actors. And all of them, I have to say, the actors are telling me, oh, no, he wouldn't say this, he would do this. Or is this sarcastic or is this literal? And I have to think through everything. I'm just amazed at how collaborative it is. And in journalism, I guess you can make an argument. You've got editors and you've got people printing the papers and so on. But at the level of the reporter, you don't really see that. All you see is you just do your story and you hand it in, and you don't see the process that goes on after that. I have worked in alternate papers where it is way more like that, but not in mainstream journalism. But this is so much that way. Everybody has a comment. I say the writer is at the bottom of the totem pole. And did Tennessee Williams have to go through this? You know, or you mentioning Arthur Miller and Pinter there before?
Right. Who knows? I was once astounded to learn that novelists actually have editors, and the editors do what you're saying with your dramaturgist does. They're really vultures on your shoulder.
Yeah. Goodness. Well, these guys, I'm going to say this for the record, a lot of the suggestions were good suggestions, and I've accepted them. We're doing the music was great, and where to put them, and when the guy, what act they should die in and stuff has all been really good, and which one should die and which one should live. So I'm humble before all this amassed expertise and insight and creativity.
You did a play before. This is your second play. You did a play on the Raymer Mothers, also based on a real-life situation with the dangers to death of children on the railroad tracks down in Raymer Housing Project. Yeah. And that was produced as a radio play. Now, I gather this one's going to see its first year, Tipping Point's going to see its first production in radio format.
That's right. This one, we are conceiving this more as a stage play, but it's a long process. And so this is the Downtown Eastside Arts Festival. By the way, there's 80 different events, and it'll be going on for the next few weeks. And how can I get in a plug there?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Oh, I don't have my phone number or email address there. I'll keep talking while I'll search for this. So this first year we're doing this as a radio play adaptation of the stage play, which will happen. The Raymer Mother's play was written as a stage, as a radio play, and that takes place just virtually the same time. I seem to be mired in the early 70s for some reason, or maybe...
Good years.
They were. We were still hopeful in those days, and things were still expanding. And those were two events, actually, the Raymer Mother's blocking the trains there, just which has become, for a lot of people, like a very seminal event in direct action and people's power, happened almost simultaneously with us, you know, what was happening in Dera. In fact, I was talking to Gene about that, and then, of course, there was the Gastown police riot at the same time, 1972, and she says, and I said, well, she was in his beer parlors, and I was down in the Gastown riot. Just, you know, as an observer, of course.
Of course.
And so hopefully we'll be going next year in a stage play version of this. But it's a lot more expensive, obviously, to put on a stage play. I'm told it would require about $30,000. So we have to go and fundraise for it. But I think it should be okay with the unions and stuff, too. The main characters are all IWA guys and talk about their old strikes and everything like that.
So the radio production of Tipping Point is going to be Thursday, right?
The Co-op Radio broadcasts this Thursday, the 27th at 8 p.m., and then there's going to be a live reading at the Ukrainian Hall on the 29th at 8 p.m., too. That's the Saturday, the 29th.
And the Ukrainian Hall is on Pender and Hawks, you said.
Right on the corner.
Right.
Right across, just the back from the Gulf and Fraser Credit Union on Hastings. It's just back from there.
Right.
And these are all part of the Heart of the City Festival, the second annual for the Downtown East Side, from October 26th until November the 6th. There's going to be performing arts, spoken word, visual art, all kinds of things. The shadow play is the biggest event we're doing this year, and I really urge people to pick up the brochure, or they can go to www.heartofthecityfestival.com. That's all one word. Or phone number 604-665-2213. And I'm doing an ad here, so this is a new experience for me, too. Usually I leave that to other people.
Okay. So run through that again for www.heartofthecityfestival, all one word.
All the usual spellings, heartofthecityfestival.com. Yeah. Or 604-665-2223. And the full-color program...
2223 or 2213?
Oh, boy. Let me get my glasses. You have your glasses on.
No, you gave... No, no. No, I have my hearing aid in, Bob,
okay.
And I heard you say one.
Okay, 665-2213.
Okay, good. See, your eyes were
I didn't need these glasses back at the Gastown police riot or any of these
That's
things.
It's a good
but
thing you didn't have them then,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, really. But I need them now. And the brochure is all over in public places and in Carnegie Center. You can pick one up on the counter there, too.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for coming in and promoting it, but most of all, coming in and speaking about the play.
Thanks so much, too, Mordecai. We'll see you then.
I've been speaking with Bob Sardi, and he's author of the new play, Tipping Point. Remember, first, you'll hear it here first on Thursday evening, Co-op Radio, 8 o'clock.